we decided, and I talked with Cara's mother.
Right.
And anyway, I talked with Mama. We didn't see Mama.
They recorded it, yeah.
And my old mother, and we all agreed immediately to cancel the order we had placed with Damon Marcus.
What kind of dress was it that you ordered?
A bridal dress, you know, like, you know, white. And
but how fancy and, was it? What, do you remember what it was like?
No, I don't really care about that. The point of the story, it doesn't matter what it looked like, it was a wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows what a wedding dress looks like. The point of the story is that first thing, Neiman Marcus, first thing I did, first thing we thought about was when we were talking about canceling the wedding, was that we had to cancel this big order we had placed from Neiman Marcus. So I called the first thing on Monday morning to cancel the wedding dress, and they informed me they had already canceled all of it.
Because everybody had done that. All the boys were being shipped. Yeah.
That's not the point either.
Yeah.
The point is that they were sharp enough to catch this.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp enough to immediately know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what you said did happen. Mm-hmm. Lots of people called. But my feeling is that they knew what the deal was. They were smart enough to call, because they had people there.
And they had, but customer service has been the focal point of Neiman Marcus since its founding. And this is a great example of it. We've always loved Neiman's because they took care of us and didn't need us.
So how many days after that were you married?
Well, we found out that Carl would not be shipped out anyplace. So among the two families, we decided to get married in where he was stationed, which was Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And take advantage of which we thought would be a Christmas holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Which turned it for service fans. But there were very few of his friends. Gosh, no more than 10, huh? Who could get off the base?
Mm-hmm.
Who could get leave to come to the wedding? It was a very small wedding. Someone asked me, "Who gave you?" Well, who? Oh, they didn't even know. My father couldn't even go. This is Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas. He's in the retail business, and he just absolutely could not leave. He had three stores in East Texas, so he couldn't leave.
So who went with your mother? And
so then, let's see. I wrote Mom. Okay. I think Mother and I went in those days, you went on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people flew,
mm-hmm.
certainly, and very few commercially. Well, anyway, we decided to be married in Sacramento. And December the 24th, it's Christmas Eve. And then Ruthie and Jim was at Harvard then. And he was in their military program.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came clear across the country. Of course, we were coming from Dallas, Texas.
Right.
My lady.
Brenda? What's her name?
You need Brenda.
Brenda. She can't do anything.
Right.
I think it's just Mother and I went. I think we went to Denver and then across to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Ruthie came back to Dallas with mother, and I guess her mother too. She introduced Ruthie to. I don't think this belongs in the story, but it's interesting. She introduced her to Tampax.
I do not think that should be in the story. Oh my God!
Ruthie introduced who to Tampax?
Ruthie, mother.
Because
I had used.
Oh my gosh!
She was impressed.
Right, right. Isn't that funny?
They really hadn't been out too long.
No, not at all. And that's so funny.
So she was. So they had these were the days of bunk beds that you could get on a train, and so Ruthie had a top bed, and I guess somebody, mother, say had the bottom bed. But anyway, mother, Ruthie all of a sudden started to menstruate. So mother said, "Oh, well, I use this wonderful Tampax."
Right, right.
So somehow or another, I guess when my train stopped, they got some Tampax. Or mother may have had some of mine, I don't know. Anyway, she had a Tampax. Gave it to Ruthie. And this is a train, and you know, if you remember, the bathrooms were about as big as the table. So anyway, Ruthie's putting on this Tampax on the second level, and this pitiful voice came out and said, "I can't get it in, and I can't get it out."
Oh, God.
Good story, folks.
Yeah.
Good story. Now, where did you and Carr Jr. go on your honeymoon? Did you have a two-day honeymoon?
Then we married on Tuesday.
The 24th. Fourth.
Well, no.
Mm-mm.
Because Ruthie and... The reason I got into Jim, Ruthie and Jim decided they wanted to come to all the parties in Dallas over the holidays. They had already planned to go to all these parties. So anyway, nobody's coming to the wedding anyhow, except these few friends of his. So I said, "Why don't you all just get married on the 23rd? So we did.
Oh,
and it was a Tuesday, and I'd forgotten that about Tuesday. A lot of things happened to me on Tuesday.
Tuesday's a good day. Sometimes.
I had a bad day. My mother, my sister, my friend, Ree.
They all died on a Tuesday.
Oh.
Well, where'd you go on your honeymoon?
San Francisco.
Oh, how pretty. Where'd you stay?
And I said, "I'll have scotch and water." And they said, "Well, how old are you? You look awfully young." I said, "Well, I'm 20. And they said, "This is California. You have to be 21 to get a drink."
What hotel did you stay at?
Drake. We had a connection. The family, through Crazy Crystals, had a connection with them. So we were able to get a real nice room.
So it was a two-day honeymoon?
It must have been more. I don't know.
Okay. And then, after you came, where did you live when you came back after the honeymoon?
Well, the war was over, but it was 2 months, and Carr was in the Pacific.
War just started. Well, the war had just, after you got married.
Oh, what a...
After you got married in 1941.
Then what? What's the question?
Then what did you do? Did you go back home to Marshall? Did you stay in California with Carr?
Oh, yeah, stay with him. Oh, yeah. He had rented this real nice apartment.
Okay.
So we lived there for a year. And then he was transferred to San Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there was, he was angling to get this house that was on the property. It had been an old ranch. They took over every ranch in South Texas during the war. Flat, good weather.
Mm-hmm.
Is perfect for an air force. Mm-hmm. So the whole South Texas was really big with air force. Carr found his house on the land that they were going that they were building or are built were building in San Marcos. You know, all you had to do is put it in a runway.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was angling to get that house. Ha! The only house.
Right.
The housing was just practically non-existent for miles.
Mm.
Anyway, San Marcos was taken up immediately. Town, and you know how many places a town like that would have?
Not many.
No. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we lived in Austin. And a number of officers lived in Austin. Mm-hmm. And we rented a house there. And Carr would go to San Marcos every day, drive. His group, three or four men, would go together. They'd take turns driving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was 30 miles, I think, away. It would do about 30 minutes to get there.
Right.
Anyway, and then by this time I was pregnant because we had decided to have a baby. Mm-hmm. But we were in Sacramento and we decided to have the baby. So the baby in utero came with us to Texas.
That's good. All right, so when you were up there, how did you get on the city council?
That's what most of you'll be interested in. Not all this stuff, but I don't know how to phrase it. Well, I guess we could just call it city council. I mean, Citizen Charter Association.
Right.
But at that time, there were a bunch of men. And he was talking about him to me. Do you know who the man was? He was big in movies. Ed Dallas. Starts with a K. I don't know. He was the one Dee was talking about. Anyway, there were a bunch of businessmen in Dallas who had years early taken over. I mean, had gotten rid of the alderman form of city council.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the single member districts because of corruption.
Well, yeah, it was sort of like that.
Right.
Single member. But it was just each little different.
Mm-hmm.
Each little different. I think it works sort of like a bunch of little cities.
Right, and you
can imagine what they do, fight each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were getting rid. It was a bunch downtown businessmen were organized this group who picked people for public office, including the legislature. Maybe it was just for the city. Anyway, this group,
Citizens Charter Association.
I was wondering.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
who is in this group at that time?
Oh, well, of course, Mr. Thornton was big in it. But they hired a man. You wouldn't call him a secretary because he had great power. He chose people by consulting with Well, I guess. Consulting with you. Anyway, to this. They chose people for the city council, and they called me. But well, this is a good start. I was visiting my father-in-law, Carpy Collins, in the hospital. He'd had a gallbladder operation. And so he and I were in this, the nurse, Bela, with the nurse, Bela Hospital. Phone rang, and it was Carr Jr., and he said, "How would you like to be the first woman on the Dallas City Council?" he said first, before he said that, he said, "Are you sitting down?" Mm-hmm. And I remember going along with the gag. I sat down, and it was on one of these old-fashioned, they weren't old-fashioned then, but it was a heater, and so Wilson, too. To do all the operations, the details.
He's the executive director of the CCA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
right, that's whatever they called him. He was the guy that ran it for them.
For them.
For them, right.
Under their... under their supervision.
Who was it that picked you? Because you had some sponsor that knew you.
To this day, I don't have the least idea.
Who was the nicest, or who mentored you when you got on the Council of the Men?
I got to be very well. Of course, the mayor, but I can't say that he counseled me. The ones who taught me about the city really taught me. Were city manager Elgin Kroll and Scott McDonald, the assistant city manager, who was later chosen city manager. But so they and I would, and there we got along just great because I was so willing. At one point, one of them, probably Scott, said, "You know, you're the only city councilman who's taking the trouble to look at the facilities that the city has, you know, like the waste, the mm-hmm. dump, all the fire station, fire parts. Anyway, we were very, very close friends.
Well, didn't the mayor when the mayor was going to have a meeting with homeowners in a neighborhood homeowners, he would send you instead of him.
Yeah.
Because they'd be mad at somebody.
Like Turtle Creek. You told me the story once about Turtle Creek.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Well, that was, let's see. Turtle Creek at that time, way to start. Turtle Creek at that time, wasn't trying to be brief. It was a two-way street. And the best street to North Dallas or to the new area that was being had been developed, two areas, Highland Park and University Park, the mm-hmm. only one really going to them. It was this two-way street, and it was beautiful. It ran parallel to Turtle Creek,
mm-hmm.
and all these beautiful trees and big homes along that. And so there was a group that violently objected to widening it. It was obvious to that it needed to be done, but this, I think it was, I'm sure it was a Highland Park group, but don't say that. What's her name? Lambert, Evelyn Lambert was their leader.
Golly.
Evelyn Lambert, she was married to
Joe Lambert.
To Joe.
Right.
Joe had a brother, too, but she was married to Joe. They had one of those homes along Will where Ed and later, years later, bought the homes. One of those along
Lakeside?
No, it was on Turtle Creek.
It was on Turtle Creek, but it was in the city of Dallas. Yeah. So it was one of those big estates, because they had these estates were acre, 2 acres wide, the 2 acre estates that overlooked Turtle Creek.
Yeah. Well, the point of the story is that this very powerful group met to protest the widening of Turtle Creek. And in fact, they did cute things. Well, not cute, but they did things like putting ribbons, purple ribbons for death, around these trees all up and down Turtle Creek. And then, but what you're referring to is this big meeting that Evelyn engineered, and they had it at Arlington Hall, and had all these seats brought in. It was packed, and the whole city council was supposed to go. They invited the city council to defend their decision to widen Turtle Creek. Well, of course, Mr. Thornton asked me, it was my area that I was from. I'd been elected. I was elected by the whole city, but I resided in this area and was responsible for it. So, anyway, I didn't have any question about not going, but everybody else did. So, meeting is... Everybody's coming in and all sitting down, and I sat down on the end of one row, about midway up, and I don't know whether it was Evelyn or who. I bet it was Evelyn. Anyway, said, "I see Mrs. Collins is in the audience. Mrs. Collins, would you come up and tell us why the city, blah, blah, you know?" So I got up with all of these people who were violently opposed to me and to the widening. But and it was successful because it's paved.
What did you say?
What did you say?
So everybody was polite.
Oh, no. They were yelling at me and questions. Real impertinent questions. And who are you to try to take over, to ruin our beautiful, beautiful city with paving the road.
Did you convince any of them when you were there?
I doubt it.
But you turned out to be the only city council person that arrived.
Yeah.
Everybody ducked them, right.
Well, Mr. Thornton said one thing. He said he wanted me to go, to be sure and go. We should have called him after it was over. I remember I stopped by Gwen's. I had told her I'd stop by her house. So I called him from there. She was very impressed with the way I talked to him. It was familiar, Laurie. They all liked me, and they all treated me from the beginning. And I think it's amazing, like I was one of them, not just some woman, gender didn't even enter into it.
That's interesting. That's great.
They were all, they all liked me.
They treated you as an equal and not as a junior member.
That's right.
Right. You know, that's
pretty good for him.
Did they want you to run again?
Yes, I did. Won. I did, and I won.
Oh, so you were two terms.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
I forgot. What was the most significant thing or issue that occurred during your terms, you think? What was the most important for the city?
Well, about the improving the roads. Because not only that, but North Dallas. But like Walnut Hill Lane was the Hump Hill Road. Hump Hill Road is one that's two ways, only two.
Mm-hmm.
And the drainage is a ditch on either side.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, the city wanted to, and I, of course, wanted Walnut Hill Lane to be widened to six lanes. Well, here came a bunch of citizens. Guess where they lived? On Walnut Hill. So they were getting enough heat that Mr. Thornton got weakened on the issue. And this is, of course, didn't go in there either, but it's part of a whole. The way I got into this particular problem was I wrote to Google early to city council meetings before Kenneth, talked to Elgin and Scott, and they had funny stories and pertinent information for me all the time. Anyway, in this case, I lost what I was going to say.
Yeah, the homeowners and
The homeowners, that's it. Yeah, then. So they were objecting Mr. Thornton was weakening. Mm-hmm. And that was what they were Elgin was telling me, is that he's weakening, and I think he ought to do something. So then he and I talked about it. We had a good friend, Francis Raffetto, who's a reporter. His reporter, among his jobs, was to report on city council.
Dallas News or Times Herald?
Dallas News.
Right.
And he is, so said, let's get Francis involved in this. Elgin and I agree, and Francis is a good friend of mine too. He's the one I went with Maria Callas with.
Mm-hmm.
That's another story. But anyway, the Dallas Morning News sent a reporter out to see how bad this road was. They really need six lanes because they're talking about school children going to school, having to walk on the sides of these roads.
By the ditch.
By the ditch. To our absolute delight, and we had nothing to do, we the city had nothing to do with it, but the photographer took a picture of two little pitiful kids who were walking. I don't know. He just caught them. They were walking along beside the ditch.
Mm.
You know, and Francis got it published.
Mm.
This is the kind of street it was. Yeah. Well, that really, that just shut up these homeowners.
What was the guy's name? Francis? That's his...
Raffetto.
R-A-F-E-T-T-O, okay.
R-A-F-F.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny?
Later. Mm.
Well, that was a great improvement.
Now, what about Maria Callas?
Oh, it was just terrible.
You mentioned Maria Callas. Were you sent to greet her when she came to Dallas?
Yeah, Mr. Thornton didn't want to go meet her.
So when he had something he didn't want to do, he'd try to get you to go?
He did. So I was telling this story a while ago to somebody and forgot to mention the fact that we went in the city, a limousine. Do you know the city out of limousine?
No.
Well, nobody knew about the city then. Well, anyway. When I was telling the story, I was telling about meeting her. And they got the impression that I drove in my car to meet her.
Oh.
And I didn't realize it until much later. But anyway, we went in the limousine, and her fellow saw us there. And he had known Callas when she sang here. The first public appearance, I think, she had.
In America, but, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, she lived in America, yeah. Anyway, he didn't want to go. Oh, and Ruffetto. Ruffetto saw a father's, really. Maria got off the plane and I met her, and we started to get in the car, and he leaned over from the front door to the back where Maria and I were sitting, and asked, he said, "Oh, would you let me?" He asked me to let him come along. He spoke to Maria, you know, very familiarly, and then asked if he could come along. I said, "Oh, of course, it's up to Miss Callas." Mm-hmm. And Maria says, "Oh, come in, darling." But anyway, she was talking about her husband at that time. You know, no, they never married. Boyfriend. Aristotle Onassis.
Mm-hmm.
So she was talking about him, and he and Francis. She and Francis talked about it. Him all the way to City Hall.
What'd they say? Do you remember?
Oh, she was mad at him.
Oh.
I don't remember.
But she remembers she was mad at him.
Oh, and just, yeah, it's first about him all the way there. I don't believe they ever married.
No, they never married. Uh-uh. They were together for 10 or 15 years.
And after Jackie, or during Jackie, really, mm-hmm. and after, he went with Callas.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah.
I remember pictures of them in his yacht.
Yeah, all right. So what, if you had a philosophy in business, what would it be? Don't borrow money. Go borrow money, OPM. You know, a lot of guys, Tom Hicks, my friend, said there's always a difference between whether it's my money or OPM. What do you mean OPM? Other people's money. It's my money, I can't be wrong. If it's OPM, I don't want to be wrong, but I can take a little more risk. So you ought to think about that, because I think we ought to put an anecdote like that. Well, you don't need to do it right now.
Yeah. I haven't said anything of real substance.
Well, no, these are great. I mean, these are wonderful stories. Mm-hmm. And it's a part of the fabric of your life. And people are always interested. What happened after Pearl Harbor? And how did you act? And what did people do? And what was the pulse of America? That it wasn't panic, but it was certainly in California, everybody was very concerned. And as you said, because the Japanese were going to invade Fresno, and
and all that. But these are all interesting things. And having been the mayor's go-to girl to go take the heat, so he would have said to you, I don't know that he said this to you, but he meant it, it's better you than me.
No, it was more like, I ain't bored to death with this kind of crap.
Right. He didn't want you to go take that grief and all that.
I remember going into one, you're like this one too, going into some luncheon, some men's luncheon, or I doubt if women were there. Anyway, it was a Rotary Club, something like that. And as we were walking down the hall to the door, he said, "Honey, where is it we're going today? What is this file? What is this club?"
Yeah.
I don't think he said club, but
yeah, what is this thing? Right.
Who is it we're talking to today?
That's right. All right, so let's see. So you think of any other stories that we ought to, I mean, because what I wanted to do was to do an oral hit with you and get stories, and all these anecdotes are fun and interesting. So to hear Maria Callas she was mad on ISIS and talked about it the whole time. So it must have been 1960. He didn't marry Jackie until 1968, I don't think. 67 or 68. And then the marriage didn't last long. I mean, it may have lasted 5 years, but he was a gruff, crude, charming Greek. And
that's all right. She got a tough, fat, rich Jew.
Yeah, she got a tough, fat. That was the bump. That guy made her a lot of money.
He did.
He was the guy that made the fortune for her.
Yeah.
I think Maurice Campbellman, I think, was the guy's name.
Yeah.
But she got $20 million from Onassis, and she got a little bit from the Kennedys. But that was the source of the fortune, was Campbellman.
Yeah.
All right, well, you keep remembering your stories. Rose, you got anything else? Or?
No, not right now. Well, this has been great.
So we need to keep thinking about that, and I'll come up with a different picture. I like this picture.
Well, if you want to really go whole hog, let's say, that could be